it's Fern here, popping in quickly before the show because I really want to hear from you. I am forever grateful to you every single time you press play on an episode of Happy Place. And this show really is for you. So in the interest of doing more stuff that you love and less of the stuff you're not bothered by, I would love it if you took a couple of minutes to fill out a little survey for me. The link will be in the show notes. Your input on the content and the format and the guests and all those types of things is so important to help me and the Happy Place team shape the future of Happy Place. So just click on the link in the show notes to share all your thoughts and musings. I appreciate you loads. Hello, I'm Fern Cotton and this is Happy Place, the space that encourages active listening and really hearing other people's stories. Today, I'm chatting to Kelsey Parker.
Your grief never gets smaller. You just learn to grow around your grief. Like, I'm never, ever going to get over the fact that I lost my best friend, my love of my life, my soulmate, at 32. Like, how am I ever going to get the father of my children? I'm never going to get over this experience. And actually, how traumatic the experience was that we went through. Even walking into that room and being diagnosed with a glioblastoma, like, I can literally pitch that down. I just had beads of sweat everywhere. 35 weeks pregnant, and they're telling me that Tom's got the worst cancer you can possibly have. It's the terminator of all cancers. I was like, as if this is happening to us.
Kelsey's husband, Tom Parker, was in the boy band The Wanted and publicly announced in October 2020 that he had been diagnosed with an inoperable brain tumour. He died in March 2022, and since then, Kelsey's been learning how to navigate her own grief, as well as that of their small children, Aurelia and Bodie. And she's been grappling with all those emotions on camera too for her new, incredibly moving ITVB documentary, Kelsey Parker, Life After Tom. When Kelsey came round to mine the other week, she'd literally just got back from an extreme challenge trekking 100 kilometres through the Sahara Desert to raise money for cancer charity Copperfield. And as you'll hear in this chat, that's just one of the many things I'm completely in awe of Kelsey for doing this year.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Okay, here it is. Here's the show. Hi, Kelsey.
Hello. Now, so formal.
This is really informal, let me tell you. I don't know why my hello was so formal. But I tried to not talk to you too much when you were coming in the house because I'm desperate to know, for real, how the Sahara Desert was.
Do you know what? Like, I just don't think I was prepared, but I don't think for something like that you're ever going to be prepared to trek across the Sahara Desert.
What was it, 100 kilometres you ended up doing? Yeah, it's outrageous.
So like 26, well, the first 2 days we did 26 kilometres and almost after the first day I nearly passed out. And I was a team leader, so I really had to be positive for everyone else. And I obviously am a positive person, but like we were out on the dunes and my team went in and I was left with the camera crew and Giovanna. And they were like, can we just have you sit down? I went, no, because I think I'm actually going to pass out. Like, and I came over all funny, but I think it's just the lack of, like, you know, how much water you've actually got to drink and how many sweets and like little bits to keep your energy going you have to have. And obviously the first day I had no clue. So after that, I was like, eating and drinking everything.
It. Yeah, because you're burning off an insane amount of energy all day walking. But it was for Copperfield, which is a charity so close to my heart. I'm a great friend of Chris Hellinger's and they're just doing incredible game-changing work. So,
well, we've raised over £1 million for the last two treks.
Amazing.
So it's incredible. And you know what? It was the most inspiring place for me to be, especially the year I've had. It was just inspiring to be around, you know, amazing women and men. Like, I had Chris on my team and he had lost his partner 3 years ago to breast cancer, and it was like I could pick his brains about where I'm going to be in 3 years' time. So
yeah, it's beautiful. And there's something about walking that enables you to get a bit deeper when you're talking. Maybe it's because you're not sat like looking each other's eyes.
You're just like,
you're just plodding and you end up off on different tangents.
And you can
see
your camp and you're walking for 4 hours thinking, when am I going to get to camp? Someone please help me. I mean, when I got asked, I didn't even think twice. I was like, yeah, I'm going to do it. Like, yeah. I needed challenges this year. I need to do things to take my mind off everything that has been going on.
I know. I mean, I just watched a few episodes. I was allowed to watch a preview of your new documentary series that you've done, Life After Tom, which is so beautiful. I mean, I messaged you on Instagram. I was in floods of tears, but laughing. It's joyful. It's kind of everything. And it is really documenting what you've been going through this year. But one thing that you do keep coming back to is that you want to keep busy. You want to keep, you know, having new challenges, trying new things. You've been doing all sorts, from hen parties to obviously this trek.
Yeah.
Are you worried about stopping, having a pause?
Well, I think so, because I just think for me that even the moment he got diagnosed, like, you know, my best friend Kelsey says it in one of the episodes, that I put this hat on and it was a bit like, right, let's not cry and let's do anything. Let's get through this. And I think that I just was on such a go, go, go for 18 months with Tom. And then when he died, I was like, right, now what can I do? I need to do something, because my life was so busy. Like, I'd be up at whatever time in the morning with the kids, then like sorting out Tom's medication during the day. And then by the evening, I'd be then on my phone researching what was out there, what we could do. Like, my life didn't stop. And then even during the day, I'd be like, we're going to this appointment today, we're doing that, Tom. Like, it was just go, go, go. I didn't have a chance to stop. But that's how we got through it. Because he had that belief in me that it was like, she's going to make everything okay. Like, we're pushing through this and Kelsey's going to make sure that I'm okay.
Which is a lot of pressure on you, but you seem to take that on. Well, but you had no option.
No option. I had to do it for him, because, you know, when you're given, you know, we didn't get a prognosis, but you Google, don't you? And you're given that. It's like, I couldn't let him be defeated by this. It was like, come on, Tom, let's get up. Let's get through this. Because you could just lay there and die. He could have had the choice and been like, do you know what? Like, I've had a lovely life up until now. Like, I'm going to give up. But he didn't.
Well, and you say this in the documentary, that from that point of him having a diagnosis to when he died, you had a house full of laughter, of positivity. And again, I'm sure you felt like you didn't have an option. There was either a very bleak however long you had with Tom, or you make the best of it. And I don't want to make that sound like it's an easy choice, because it's certainly not.
It's
but
not,
you
yeah.
were like, I'm walking down that road.
Well, I didn't even think about this other road. I was like, this is the road we're going to take. And especially Tom, like, I'd been with him so long. 12 years. Like, I was 19 when I met him. I knew him inside out, and I knew that we couldn't even visit that other lane, because he would have just crumbled and laid down and it'd been the end. Because when he was first diagnosed, all he kept saying to me was, I'm going to die. And I was like, no, you're not. You're not going to die. You're going to be fine. Let's get through it, Tom. Let's not go there. You're not going to die. So I knew something within me was like, we've got to get through this. And how am I going to get him through it?
Mm. But this is a process, obviously, that, you know, you're still going through now. This is now how you navigate grief. And that's what you've been extremely generous in sharing with all the stuff that you've done since Tom passed away. And with this documentary that you... I guess it's giving you a drive and a purpose, but it must be so connective. You're meeting so many other people, like you say, on the trek, and you meet a group of widowers in the documentary where you're able to talk about your experience, you're learning about other people's experience, but it's not like it ends.
It's never going to get easy. You know, they say your grief never gets smaller. You just learn to grow around your grief. Like, I'm never, ever going to get over the fact that I lost my best friend, my love of my life, my soulmate, at 32. Like, how am I ever going to get the father of my children? I'm never going to get over this experience. And actually how traumatic the experience was that we went through. Yeah. Just even walking into that room and being diagnosed with a glioblastoma, like, I can literally pitch that day and I just had beads of sweat everywhere. 35 weeks pregnant, and they're telling me that Tom's got the worst cancer you can possibly have. It's the terminator of all cancers. I was like, as if this is happening to us.
Yeah, I mean, you don't get over that. You can't get over that. You can, I guess, you try for acceptance, but is that even possible with something like
that? No, and I don't think he ever accepted it.
No.
And that's what I think's really difficult. And I never wanted him to accept it, But it always, it just weighed heavy on us all the time that he would say to me, but I've got a brain tumour, Kelsey, you don't understand, I've got a brain tumour. I'm like, no, no, I definitely know you've got a brain tumour because I'm living this with you.
Yeah, but you were just treading water and trying to keep...
Literally, that's what I felt like. I was just trying to keep us afloat all the time. Mm. But, you know, he did so much for me over the time we like had together that it was like I had to do that for him. How could I not have done that for him?
Yeah. And you were with him right up until the very final moments in the hospice, lying in bed with him. And as much as you know that moment is coming, there's nothing that can prepare you for that.
No, nothing could have prepared me for that. And it was, do you know what, for me, it was the realisation that, this was going to be the end. Like, I never went there. I never went there. And people go, oh, did you talk about this? Did you talk about that? It's like, no, I never went there. We never went to that place. And then when he went so downhill so rapidly, it was the biggest shock. And then I remember he went into the hospice on a Friday. And honestly, I didn't stop crying the whole day. And then I couldn't go up and see him because I thought, how can this be the end now? And I knew the end was coming, but I was thinking, how can I now cope with this in my life? How can I make his death the best death that he could possibly have? Which I knew he was dying, and how heartbreaking is that to know that he was going to die then? You just find the strength from within. That's all I can say to people, that I found the strength from within to go, do you know what? I've got to get up there and I've got to make this the best it can possibly be. Mm. And I got everyone there. We had everyone around him. He was surrounded by love. And I think that's what you want at the end, don't you? To know how loved you are.
Yeah. And you absolutely did that for him. And then, of course, after going through something so unthinkable and so huge and something, you know, like you've just said, you hadn't gone there mentally before. So you're having to deal with this in real time. That is the end. There is no more Tom. And then straight away, you're back home. You've got to be a mum. I mean, again, that's just an inner strength that kicks in. But surely you must have had days where you're like, I can't do this. This is all too much.
I definitely did. And I have the most amazing family and friends that came round, and they would take shifts. So someone would do the 6 a.m. shift to make sure that like someone was there with the kids, and like just even taking me downstairs and put me on the sofa, basically, so I could watch what was happening. But I did actually, the day after he died, I took the kids to the preschool, and I went and I took them, and the teachers were so shocked. But I thought, I've got to show face. And you know what? I've then got that out the way. They've seen me, they've seen the kids, and that's it. We just move forward as a family.
Yeah. And you've been very direct in your language that you've used around the kids. You've used the word dead, you've used the word death.
I think you have got to be really clear with the words you use, and it's definitely helped the children. You know, it was hard when the Queen died, because Aurelia started going, what, the Queen's died? My dad's died? Are they together in the sky together? And it was just like them reliving it. And also, my granddad's not well at the moment, and you know, I don't know what's going to happen there, but there's a lot of talk around the death word again, and it's just, it's the kids being aware that this does happen. When I was honest with them and I said, Daddy's got to go today and I'm going to just make sure the angels take Daddy, like, she was okay about that then, because it was like she knew what was happening. But I just think it's going to be an ongoing thing for us. Like Bodie, even in the last, you know, 8 months since we've lost Tom, how much he's developed. So now he even said yesterday to my friend, my daddy's in the sky. So he's now getting his head around the fact that his dad's dead and his dad's in the sky. You know, I spoke to Chris, who I was on the trek with, and he said it's really hard for his daughter when they go into school, because again, it's she has to relive it all the time. It's the reliving it. They're going to have to relive this for the rest of their lives. I'm going to have to, aren't I?
Yeah. And of course, there's going to be like constant, you know, markers that you reach. You know, you've already done some pretty rough ones, your wedding anniversary. Mm. And I saw in the documentary, you know, you're like, I don't want to watch the wedding video back. I'm not ready to go there. That's too big. You've done your best mate's wedding without Tom. I mean, this is like draining. This is so much for you energetically to keep having to go, I've got to be strong again today because there's another massive thing happening.
It is. It is like relentless. But then life's relentless, isn't it? This is the life that's been handed to me. I've just got to get on with it.
I mean, one of the things I know you're keen to talk about, and that you've definitely talked about in the documentary, is that in the UK, we have a very strange approach to death. We talk about it exclusively in a negative way. And I think that then leads to us not really talking about it. There's so much awkwardness around it.
Yep.
And it was really weird timing. I found out this morning, literally on the school run, one of my mates has lost his sister so suddenly. It's really out of the blue, no warning. It's been a huge shock to them. And that is one of the things that we talked about literally at the school gates today, is that people don't know what to say to you. And you've even said in the documentary, you've had people cross the road to avoid you.
That's what I was going to say. People cross, like when I went to like my friend's wedding, like people actually that I've known for a very long time didn't want to talk to me. And I'm literally the most like open person, talk to me about anything. And they're like, hi, bye. And then that was it. I'm like, no one actually wants to talk to me because they don't know what to say. Because it's...
And they don't want to get it wrong?
Yeah.
Is it that? Is it the fear of...
But I would never be offended by what anyone had to say to me. I literally would not care. You're never going to offend me. Like, this has happened to me. Tom has passed away. Like, what can be offensive to me?
Well, nothing can be as bad as what
that,
you've been through. So you've got
never
that.
Yeah.
You've got a resilience there. But I think there is this weird... There's an awkwardness. There's a fear. It's really strange. And actually, I think, you know, we've done quite a few conversations on Happy Place around death and with my guests like you talking in this amazingly honest and raw way about it. It's obviously, it's painful. It's not a nice subject to talk about, but it's healthy to talk about
it. But also, it's not black and white either. And I think we're just so black and white in this country that it's like, I should be walking around, I am wearing a black jacket, but I should be like in black, mourning, wearing like my black veil over my face and not speaking to anyone. But that life's not like that. You know, I've learned through this that you can be so many different emotions in one day, but even in 5 minutes. I could feel sadness, anger, happy, and been laughing all literally within the space of 5 minutes, because it's not, you know, and I have been left here. Like, I've been left here without Tom, and what do I do with my life now? Like, I can't be sad. I've got two kids. Like, how can I wake up every day and be sad? Yes, I am sad, but my life has to continue and move on. And if Tom's not taught, like, what he's taught us is that life is so short.
Yeah.
Like, so short, and literally it can happen like that. It can be sudden. Like, we're not guaranteed tomorrow, so you have to enjoy every day that you're given here.
You're absolutely right. And, you know, I haven't had the same experience as you, so I don't know those feelings. But even watching this documentary, following your story that you both shared with us and that you're now sharing... That is, for me, this. I can't walk away from watching something as powerful as what you've created for these docs and just go about my life flippantly. You feel like you've got to grab it and you've got to live it. And, you know, that's incredibly complicated for you, because there's so much, you know, again, thinking back to the episode of the documentary I watched last night where you've done this amazing hen party for your mate. I was watching thinking, I'd quite like to be there actually, with a massive gin and tonic that you're all drinking, having a brilliant time. But that there is, yes, I've had a great time with my friends and I've shown my best mate how much I love her, but there's a guilt that you're having fun. Is that something that you're still dealing with daily?
Yeah, I think for me, I didn't realise how big the guilt process was going to be for me. Like, I do feel guilty. You do feel guilty having a good time. I mean, the hen do was the first night I'd actually been out since Tom passed away. And it's the guilt that you're living your life now. But what would he want me to do? He'd want me to be happy. We've been together so long, he'd be like, Kels, just go and enjoy your life. You have one life. Like, that's all I've learned, that I've got one life.
So if those feelings come up, do you just have to sit and go...
I have to sit with them, and then I think it through and I process it. It's really tough, and you can't explain to people like how you feel. And sometimes I feel like there is a grief brain, and I'm a bit like, even when I do the documentary, they ask me questions, I'm like, I can't actually answer that to you because I actually don't have an answer, because my brain's not actually functioning to give you the answer that you need right now.
You've just got so much going on constantly that it's, I'm pretty sure a lot of people who are grieving or who have had that sort of level of bereavement have a fog. Like, you can't... Yeah.
You can't shift it sometimes. I can't actually give you... I can't answer your question. Like, there is no answer.
And this is another thing, you know, when you've done any public appearances, or even when your mates have seen you and they say, you know, the regular question, hey, Kelsey, how are you? How do you answer that? that's not getting any easier, I don't suppose.
No. And it's like each day I feel different. Like if I turn around and go, yeah, I'm having a great day, you'd be like, oh, are you? Are you having a great day? You do know your husband's just died. It's like, no, I actually am having a great day today.
Mm.
And I'm entitled to have a great day.
Of course you are.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
What I'm wondering, going back to this awkwardness, because I'm really interested in it, because I think so many people out there are on either end of it. The receiving end of it, like you say, painful to have someone cross the road to avoid you because they can't find the words to say. And then I think also there's people that want to comfort someone in their life who's lost someone, and they don't know how. I know it's different for everyone, and it could even be a slightly annoying question for me to ask you, but what is helpful? What is a helpful show of support in that moment where you are in the thick of grief? Is there such a thing as helpful support in that moment?
Do you know what? That my friends and family were massive. Like, they did things that you like that, coming to my house and just sitting there and being with me. It's maybe not even saying any words. Like, I remember when Tom actually went into the hospice. So I've got younger brothers who are 15 and 17. And I just found out Tom was going into hospice. I was at my mum's house. And I was just in floods of tears. And my little brother came in and he didn't realise what had happened. And he just sat with me. And he sat with me for half an hour and did not move. Didn't say one word to me, but was just there. And I think it's just the being there for someone. You know, people were so amazing at just being there for me. Maybe not even saying what I needed them to say, because what words can you say that it's never going to make it right? It is a tough question, but you know, now I'm like, people can talk to me, like, we can have a conversation, we can have a gossip, we can speak about other things.
Yeah.
Or it's like, they don't want to even, if something could happen, they're like, someone died. Oh no, Kelsey said we can't talk about death. But a bit like when he had cancer, people don't want to talk about like someone else having cancer.
Yeah. But I love that, because you're just blowing the lid off that one. Like, let's get it out in the open. And I think, you know, you could really see that in the documentary when you met with some very young widowers as well, that connection brought you all something. How did those conversations help you?
Do you know what? I was so worried about going to meet other widowers, because I was like, oh God, this is like doom and gloom. But actually, when I got there with them, they were the only people that actually understood how I felt. And I'm like, okay, I'm not weird that they feel exactly the same as me. Because I thought, oh, you know, we might have different views here, but they did all feel the same.
Yeah, yeah. And it's that, I guess it is comfort that you're not alone, you're not going through it on your own. And I guess, especially in the early days after losing Tom, I'm sure that you felt very lonely, isolated, because, you know, who can you talk to who's been through that? There's no one in your life that's experienced that. How did you deal with that loneliness?
And I think it is, and also I don't want to put it on other people. So when I was lonely in the evenings, you know, I didn't want to ring up people and go, do you want to come around and sit with me? Because they're living their lives. And it's a bit like when Tom was ill, I didn't want to put that on anyone else. Like, this was our problem, our situation. We just had to get through it. And the same, it's my problem, I need to get through it. You don't want to put on other people all the time, because I feel like I have to rely on a lot of other people now, even with the children. Like, I have to rely on my mum and my auntie to help me with the kids, because I am a solo parent.
But they must love doing it. I think there is an element of, you don't want to put it on people, but I think people want to help, they want to show up. Like, I think most humans, maybe I'm exaggerating, a large portion of humans are actually really, like, they have a lot of goodwill and they really want to help. But if you're, you know, you seem like a very strong person and, you
know,
everyone
like, don't get involved with her.
Well, no, I think it's more that you think, no, I've got to do it all myself. Yeah. I've got to show that I can do this. But I think people are so much more willing to help than any of us believe.
Yeah.
It's a hard barrier to break down, though, when you're used to, like, I've got to power through this.
Yeah. And it was, I found it hard asking for help for Tom, like the last couple of weeks. I found that really hard, because I'd managed up until a certain point and I couldn't manage anymore, and it was really hard for me to reach out to other people to say, I am struggling now, like, I've got to a point where I can't actually cope.
Yeah.
And that was really difficult for someone like me, because where I am, like, proud and I'm like, I'm doing this, it was really tough. And also, I wanted to be there. I wanted to be the sole person to look after him and be like, I'm getting you through this. And then when I had to ask other people, I'm like, oh, I hope he doesn't think that I'm giving up on him.
God, no. God, no. Like,
but that's what I mean. That's the guilt. You go back to the guilt stage. You feel the guilt.
Yeah. But I mean, I don't think anyone would expect anyone to do that on their own. It's such a huge thing to go through without someone going, okay, you're taking care of Tom and the kids. Let me take care of you. You know, that's a given that people would want to do that.
Yeah.
You've got to let more of that in.
I know. And that's what I'm meeting a therapist for the show, and that's what she keeps saying to me. You're so at the bottom of the pit, you need to put yourself at the top. But I'm like, I find it really hard.
I think a lot of women
do that.
Feel like that in general, yeah. Just in life, outside of it
when
being a very tricky situation. Yeah, you kind of, I think that's perhaps a historic thing for women, that we've felt we've always got to take care of everyone, deal with all manner of circumstances unfurling. But actually, it's all right to ask for help, especially in something like what you've been through. You know, I think it's imperative that you ask for help. How's the counselling? Has it helped you, I guess,
well,
first?
I'm not someone who would like necessarily seek help from a counsellor, but it has helped. It's like definitely opened my eyes to things and made me think a little bit more, maybe ways that I didn't think. So it has. I don't know. I don't know how I feel about it. Man, how do I feel? How do I feel about it?
But, you know, again, maybe there's no answer to that.
Yeah.
Because I've done therapy on off over the years, and sometimes I think, I'm so getting somewhere, like I'm, you know, the anxiety's getting easier or whatever it is. And other times I think, why am I doing this?
Yeah.
I don't know. You know, I don't think there is any one answer. And I think that's also really important to talk about, because sometimes people might assume it's the only answer. You have to have therapy. It's the only thing that can fix you. But I think there are so many different things that you can implement and use alongside counselling. Or it could just be like you say, like, I just loved you saying there about your little brother who, you know, has not dealt with something like this before, but intuitively gets it, that just sitting with you
was enough.
Help.
It was enough. Like, to
it's
just
enough.
Be there for his big sister. And
That's
must have been
huge.
Weird for him as well, because your big sister's always there for you. And he had to step up and be like, okay, I'll just sit here with her until mum finishes what she's doing, until my mum was back.
Yeah, because of course, that's again, I think, something that you all depicted really brilliantly in the documentary series, is that Tom's death has affected all of you. It's a ripple effect, and everyone will be dealing with it in different ways. And not only will your mum and stepdad be massively missing Tom, but also they're then dealing with a daughter who's experiencing grief. So there's everybody's learning on their feet about this sort of shift, like this new dynamic.
And then we've got kids, and then we've got the babies as well. We've got Aurelia and Bodhi to then go, right, how do we then deal with them? So it is just the ripple effect, and it affects everyone. And like my brothers, Tom was in their lives from they were 3 and 5. Like, he was like their brother. So now they've had to go through this grief. And then I look at them thinking, are they dealing with it okay? Like, how are they?
And it, like you say, it's going to be different every day, that they're coping with it or they're not coping with it. And then you're coping with it and you're having a shit day. You know, it's not one thing.
It literally is a roller coaster, and that's it. It's a roller coaster of grief.
Yeah. One thing that you've been incredible at doing, well, I mean, there's loads of things, but one thing that really again stood out is trying to turn difficult days into celebrations. So one difficult day in the calendar was always going to be Tom's 34th birthday.
Yep.
And you knew it was coming up. And that's obviously a huge thing to go through. You know, one of my mates lost his partner last year, and he found the anniversary of her death so difficult, like just trudging through quicksand to sort of get through it. And I loved watching the episode where you turned this, you know, day that was looming in the calendar to a beautiful celebration, and you organised a fun day with a 5K walk. How did that feel? Was it as joyful as it seemed?
Oh, it was incredible. Mm. That day was so incredible. And I wanted something to look forward to and to work towards. And it, true Kelsey style, blew up bigger than what I actually anticipated it to.
You thought you were going to sell like 5 tickets and there were, 600 people?
And I was like, oh, okay. So yeah, this has gone bigger than what I could ever imagine. But it's just celebrating him. Like, he was the life and soul of the party. And for me, I don't want him to be remembered for this person that had a brain tumour for the last, like, 2 years. Like, for me, it's let's celebrate the old Tom that was there and up dancing and doing whatever. So we had, like, amazing acts. Obviously, Arj came and performed.
Bless Arj.
Bless him.
He was so good.
I do just love him. He just cracks me
He's
up.
He's brilliant.
But, yeah, it was, you know, celebrating Tom. How can I not celebrate him? I loved him so much. Like, it's, for me, celebrating the love with everyone.
Yeah, it looks so gorgeous, so gorgeous.
And it's good for the, and it was good for the kids to see. Like, Aurelia was wearing the picture of her dad and she knew everyone was there to celebrate her dad.
Yeah.
And this is all stuff for her to look back on and go, do you know what? Life's tough, but we somehow make it positive.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. And how was your best friend's wedding? Because that was obviously another big one that, you know, you were articulating there was some nerves around that and a lot of mixed emotions of obviously utter elation they're getting married, but also, you know, Tom wasn't going to be there with you. How did that feel?
It was really tough because actually our whole friendship, when Kelsey and Dean got together, me and Tom used to be like, can you just go and get married in Vegas? Like, just because we used to go to Vegas all the time. It's like, can you just get married in Vegas? Let's go to Vegas. And then when Tom died, I just said to them two, like, can you get married? Like, it would really, like, mean so much for me if you two got married. I know he's not going to be there. It was tough because he would have been Dean's best man. And even, like, when it came to the stag do, I had to get involved and help organise that. Because it's like sort of my duty of care to Tom to be like, he would have had a part to play in this. But yeah, I tried to keep really strong. And then one of Kelsey's friends got up and did a soulmate poem. And that just had me. I was like, oh, it really, really was really hard for me to watch that. But then I was just so happy they got married. And now they can feel happiness like me and Tom felt.
Yeah. I just think that's amazing, Kelsey, that you're able to sit there and, you know, even watching that bit on the documentary, it's heartbreaking seeing you have to listen to that beautiful poem about soulmates, knowing that you've lost your soulmate. Mm. But you're somehow able to sort of dance between feeling really happy for someone and then dealing with your own grief, but not letting the grief overtake the joy bit. I just think it's honestly amazing. And I know you're not like sat there wanting me to go, you're so brilliant and an inspiration, but I find it just truly admirable.
Yeah. I just don't know how I can do that, though.
Do you think that's just how you are? Is that your personality type, even before going through this tricky time?
I think, like, Tom used to always go on about certain aspects of my life and be like, I don't know how you process that, Kels. I don't know how you deal with it. But I can just deal with stuff. Like, I think I'm just made of strong stuff. I don't know. Because he used to always, like, question me about certain things. I'm like, Tom, I can't explain to you. I can just get through it. I can deal with it. Yeah. Even at the age of 19, getting with someone who was in, like, being in the public eye and being in this band and being surrounded by a lot of girls, like, all my friends used to say, only you could be with someone like that. Mm. Like, because I was never bothered. I never felt jealous either that he was ever going to go off and cheat on me. Because, you know, that's the question you get asked.
Of course.
Oh, are you worried? I'd be like, no, Tom would have to ask me first if he wanted to cheat on me. Do you think this is a good idea?
That's hilarious.
Yeah, but do you know what I mean? That's the sort of relationship we had. Like, I was never worried because I just think as well, why am I going to worry about that? If he is going to do it, I'm going to find out and I'll deal with it then. Like, you know, like, but a lot of people would be jealous about that.
Mm. You're good at living in the moment.
Really
right?
Good at living in the moment. And even if Tom was out talking to a girl, I'd be like, well, you crack on and have a conversation with him because I have him at home 24/7, so you have a lovely little chat with him tonight. Like, I just didn't feel that way.
Mm. Does that sometimes prove difficult if people then just assume, oh, she's all right. Look at her, she looks fine. But of course, we've just talked about this. Grief is complicated. You can appear
fine,
strong,
capable.
You can go and do your job. You can be a mum and look after your kids. And then people make the assumption, oh, she's all right. But of course, you live with grief. It doesn't go.
Yeah.
You can experience other emotions alongside it. But grief is there. You've got that. Even watching in the documentary, you've got the room in the house with all Tom's kit in it.
Yeah.
And you don't want to get rid of that. That's Tom's studio. You don't want to...
How do you get rid of it?
How do you get rid of that? So you've got all of these complexities, decisions that you've got to make, situations within the four walls of your home that you've got to deal with. Yet you could walk to the shops, buy a coffee, and everybody that sees you thinks, oh, she's doing fine.
Yeah.
Is that... That's tricky.
It is really tricky. And really, I just think the whole time, I just think people look and just see what they want to see. But if they actually walked in my shoes and lived my life that I've lived for the last 2 years, I just think some people wouldn't have been able to get through this, like what I've been through.
Mm.
And, you know, it is like, it is being at home, looking at every picture of him, looking at his studio. It is just so tough for me and tough for the kids that, you know, we are living with him still basically being in the house, but I could not bring myself to chuck the studio equipment away.
No.
Not that I'm even going to take up being a music producer, but it took him 5 years to learn how to do it.
But I think so many people who have lost someone, it might not be a partner, it might be a parent or someone that lived in their home, you know, I think that is, there are so many practical things that you have to consider. What do you do with their belongings? I mean, in our loft, we've still got tons of my husband Jesse's mum's stuff up there. Mm. It's been there for 17 years and he hasn't actually found the right moment to go up there and to really look at it all because he knows it's going to be...
It's tough.
..a big thing to go through that and to sit and she died very out of the blue in not very nice sort of circumstances. So I think he's delaying that a bit and he knows he is. But we're never going to chuck that stuff away. So I think these are the sort of things, again, that people don't probably have open access to these conversations. What do you do with the stuff? You know, do you just keep it? Is that okay?
And there's no wrong or right. Like, when Tom passed away, the next day, everyone was at my house. Like, for a few days, everyone was just coming and being there and supporting me and, you know, all my family. And I said to my brothers, go upstairs and take whatever clothes you want of his. Because for me, that felt right. And Tom was not a person that, like, was overly possessive about his possessions. Like, he would have wanted the boys to have him. I said, take whatever clothes you want from that wardrobe because I will love to see you wear that. And now when they walk around, I see them in his trainers or whatever else. I'm like, that's so lovely for me to see.
Mm.
But some people will go, why have you done that for? Why has she given all her brothers the clothes? But that felt right for me. But now I'm like 8-9 months down the line, I've still got clothes and belongings that I can't now bring myself to get rid of because now you've got that emotional attachment to it. It's sort of like when you rip the plaster off, you do it quickly, it's okay, but the longer you leave it on and the slower you do it, it's like, oh.
Yeah, but there's no wrong or right.
No, there is no wrong or right.
That's the thing, and that's why it's so important to talk about it so that people know, you know, you've got to deal with it in the right way. And there's no time frame. There's no, you have to be at this point however many years down the line. You know, grief's always going to hurt.
But I feel like we believe that in the UK, that there is points that you should be at. Like,
yeah,
that you should be hitting that point, and then you should be here, and then you should be there. Like, it's not like that. Life's not like that.
Nope. And also, I don't know why people assume that it's okay to judge others on their experience of life.
Yeah.
You know, we have no clue what people are going through behind closed doors, deep down, in their, you know, minds. We don't have a clue. We're making guesses, assumptions. So for anyone to suggest that anyone should be grieving
in
on
a certain
a
way,
time plan,
yeah,
or in a certain way, it's mad.
But even when I went and met the group of older women.
Oh, I loved that bit.
Well, I was talking to one of them, oh, and she'd met her husband at a dance. Oh my God, she's breaking my heart.
Heaven.
They met at a dance. She said after, like, she met him, he took her home. 3 weeks later, they were engaged. And then 4 months later, they were married. And I went, what did people say? But like, that, like, but imagine if I, like, if you was like, oh yeah, I was 4 weeks. And then people would be like, oh my God.
Yeah.
How do you know? You don't know if you know him. Like, you've not been with him long enough. It's, we're all just so, so judgmental. But I thought, no, good on you. And then she lost him when he was 42. So she did get married really quick, but you know what? She stayed together. She stayed with him all that time and absolutely loved him and idolised him.
Yeah, it was really interesting that. I thought it was a really lovely moment watching you talk to these ladies. Again, they'd all lost their partners at differing moments,
yeah,
some relatively early, like the lady you just spoke, yeah, about. Some had been with their husbands for 40, 50 years. How did that make you feel, sort of seeing these widowers who had this sort of long journey with grief? And how was it sort of hearing about their own experiences?
It was different with, like, both the women. Like, that some, obviously, that had been together with their partners for, like, 40 years, I felt quite jealous in a weird way. That I was like, oh, you've had all that time. And me and Tom would walk down the street and go, oh, we're going to be that little old couple on the bench eating our chips or whatever together. I mean, that's not happened for me. But then the other women were doing great that had lost their partners at like a similar age to me. They're living life. They're getting on with it.
So it gave you some hope?
It did give me hope. I felt different emotions, didn't I?
Yeah.
I felt jealousy, but then I felt hopeful as well. So, And you'd never think you'd be jealous of a 80-year-old woman, but I was.
Yeah, I get it. Yeah. I totally get it. And I think it's so important to talk about, like, it's complex. It's not, you're not ever going to feel one thing. This is like a massive mixed bag of so many emotions coming up. How are you going to navigate Christmas? Because that's obviously, again, it's a time of nostalgia. It's, you know, it's just, that is the time where everything is, it's sort of the same each year. The smells and the colours and the tree and, you know, that is a big time for people who have been through something similar to you to really struggle. How are you going to navigate it?
Well, normally we go to my mum's. We've been to my mum's every year for the last 12 years. Yeah, well, 11, 12 years. So we're actually going to mix it up and we're all going to come to my house. But last Christmas in the morning, Aurelia got it and Tom was like, I can't believe that she's like understanding like Father Christmas. And she was only 2 at the time. So I think it's going to be a real struggle for me because he couldn't believe that she understood the footprints been here. Oh my God, the reindeers have eaten the carrots. Like she got it and she understood it. And it was his face that I was laughing at being like, he's so shocked how intelligent his daughter is. So I just think it's going to be so, so tough. And it's a cheerful time, isn't it? And sometimes, and I might not feel cheerful on Christmas morning this year.
Yeah, and that's fine.
But then it boils down to my kids. How can I take that away from them? They're going to be happy, aren't they? They're going to have all the presents and be grateful with what they've got. But it's like, I've lost so much this year.
Yeah.
Like, it's not going to be a good Christmas, is it? Oh, God, I'm now getting emotional. But it is. It's like I've lost the love of my life this year. Like, I don't feel like I'm going to feel very, like, cheery.
Yeah.
Christmas is going to be tough. And I don't know, like, out of all of it, it's the one that I'm dreading the most, Christmas.
Yeah, I get it. It's a huge one.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, just so many people feel like that. Christmas is, it's sort of shoved down your throat that it's got to be this thing. Yeah. And it's got to be, you're meant to feel this way.
Yeah.
And for so many people, it's not. It's the worst. Yeah. It's really hard. It's really hard. I just think, you know, who am I to say? But, you know, you're obviously going to put a lot of effort into making sure your kids are all right. You've got to make sure someone makes sure you're all right. Yeah. Or at least is, like, there with you, giving you a big hug.
Oh, I'm sure I have lots of hugs.
Not you will. Big.
Well, even though I just have so many hugs from the kids, they're going to just love it.
Yeah, they will. They will.
But he's still just not going to take away from the fact that he's not here.
No, no, it won't. You're so bloody brilliant in talking about all this, and you know, it sounds flippant to say, God, you're so strong, but I'm in full admiration of how you're navigating all of it, and I just think it's really generous that you're sharing so much with everybody, because there's so many people going through this feeling very alone, and I just think you're going to unite a lot of people.
Yeah, and if I can help a few people, then I've done what I've set out to do, haven't I? Like, this whole time I've just wanted to help people, and it's that, and the people to look at me to go, oh no, do you know what, it's actually okay. It's okay to feel like that. That's normal.
Yeah, it's totally. It's normalising all of those feelings, and also showing that you can be both strong and resilient, but also completely fall apart at the same time. And there shouldn't be any expectations on anyone when dealing with something as massive as grief, because it's not for anyone else to say.
Mm.
It's really not. Have you watched any of the documentary back?
Yeah, I have been watching.
And how has that made you feel?
It's so hard, because when you do watch it, like, honestly, I do watch it and I think, what are people going to actually think?
Oh, don't worry about that, please. It's brilliant. Don't worry about that.
I know, but I do think, because again, we're talking about all these different things and all these different emotions. Like, and we have got such a view on grief that I just hope people can relate to me. But I hope people watch and think that in such dark times you can have happiness.
Yeah, I think they'll really get that from it, like massively. They really will. And well done for making it, because it has been tough. Of course it has.
But yeah, it's been therapy for me doing the show. Mm. I think even not seeing the therapist, this show has been therapy for me. You know, the morning of the NTAs, I was in a right state because for me, that was closing a chapter. Like, that's a, it wasn't a first, but it was actually closing a chapter on the cancer journey. Like, going there and, you know, being up for the award for our documentary that me and Tom did together, that was closing a chapter that I had with Tom. And it, I really struggled that morning to do that. Because I thought, I don't want this chapter to end. I wish he was here.
Yeah.
And now I'm filming another documentary on my own.
Yeah. It's a lot to deal with. It's a hell of a lot to deal with. But I think, you know, I guess your drive to want to really help people is pushing you through it, isn't it?
Definitely.
Yeah. Oh, it's brilliant. It's so brilliant. And I'm so glad you made it. And I'm so glad that you're really up for talking about this stuff, because I don't ever take it for granted that I can walk into a situation like this and just quiz you about your personal life. You know, that is, it's a privilege for me doing this podcast, because I don't just think, oh yeah, I just get to ask everyone the questions and they answer. I know that it can be draining and painful and triggering and all that stuff. And I'm massively appreciative that you are up for talking today and, you know, telling other people out there that there is hope and there can be positivity and joy and all that stuff.
In the darkest of times, you can pull light. There is light out there. We are light. Like, you just got to shine a light on it.
Yeah, and you're doing it. You're really doing it. Kelsey, thank you so much for talking today. I really appreciate it. And good luck with the rest of the filming, because I know you've still got, you're in the thick of it.
Yeah.
You've got loads more to do. And I'm just sending you all the love and good vibes in the rest of your journey making this documentary and going forwards.
Thank you so much.
Kelsey, I know I said it about a million times in that chat, but I will say it again. I just think you're the most incredible woman. I think it's such a powerful and important message that we're allowed to be strong and resilient and fall apart at the same time. Thank you so much for being so open and honest and raw today. That new documentary, Kelsey Parker, Life After Tom, is out on ITVB. Okay, let me tell you now, you do not want to miss next week's episode. Tantalising. So make sure you're following the podcast so you're notified as soon as it's available. Until then, huge thanks again to Kelsey, to the producer, Anushka Tate at Rethink Audio, and to you, lovely lot, I adore ya.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.